I want to transport you just for a second to an early April morning.
Okay.
The year is 2025. You are in Ansan, South Korea, and you're sitting at your desk. You're the purchasing manager for this major robotics and motor manufacturing company.
High stress job for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And for days, you've just been staring at a pending email. You sent it to your primary supplier in China, and it's supposed to confirm this massive, totally business-critical
All
order.
right.
But there is just no reply, nothing. So you finally, you pick up the phone and call the supplier directly.
Which is never a good sign.
No, never. And the voice on the other end of the line sounds, well, tense. Deeply apologetic, but entirely unhelpful. They basically tell you that your shipment of high-temperature permanent magnets, the exact foundational components you need to build the robotic joint motors your company sells, is halted indefinitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you ask when it's going to ship, and the answer is literally just a sigh and an, I don't know.
I mean, that is the ultimate supply chain nightmare right there. And the really wild reality of that specific moment in Ansan was that it wasn't some isolated glitch. It wasn't a lost shipping container or a paperwork error.
Right.
That single stalled shipment in South Korea was just one tiny ripple in this massive, deliberate global shockwave.
And that shockwave is exactly the mission for our deep dive today. We are unpacking the insights from this fascinating 2026 book release that examines the Chinese robotics industry, global tech hegemony, and specifically, we're looking at chapter two.
The weaponization of core minerals.
Exactly. We're going to explore how a few incredibly obscure elements on the periodic table, specifically these things called heavy rare earth elements, or HREs, basically became the ultimate geopolitical choke point.
Yeah, they really did.
We're talking about a bottleneck that was literally capable of halting everything from global auto manufacturing to the mass production of advanced humanoids, right up to the most sophisticated military defense systems on the planet.
It touches everything.
It really does. Okay, let's unpack this because we need to look at the macro policy that actually caused this South Korean buyer's massive headache in the first place.
Right, the restriction itself.
Because the way this restriction happened in the spring of 2025 is wild. Like, there was no declared embargo,
Hey.
no dramatic press conference announcing a trade war.
Oh, far from it. It started on April 4th, 2025, with this
Wow.
deeply, deeply bureaucratic document.
Classic.
Right. China's Ministry of Commerce and the General Administration of Customs issued what was simply called Announcement Number 18.
Sounds very harmless.
Very harmless. But on paper, what it did was institute an export permit system on seven specific heavy rare earth elements, as well as the sintered neodymium magnets that are actually made from them.
Right, and just to put some names to these elements so you get a sense of what we're talking about samarium, gadolinium, terbium, dysprosium, lutetium, scandium, and yttrium.
Right. Seven extremely specific materials. But the truly staggering part of this announcement wasn't just the list itself, it was the extraterritorial jurisdiction rule that was attached to it.
Oh, this part is crazy.
It really is. The export control was literally designed to apply to parts and assemblies, even if they contain just 0.1% of those seven elements.
Which is just an incredibly wide net. I mean, if you're a manufacturer in Germany,
Yeah.
right, and you're building a motor,
Right.
and you buy this tiny little subcomponent from Mexico,
No.
but that subcomponent contains like a.
And that dynamic just kept escalating. By October 2025, China actually added five more elements to this permit list.
Wow.
Yeah, and that specific October edition was essentially mimicking the U.S. Foreign Direct Product Rule. It was pushing back against American restrictions on semiconductor tech.
Though I think it's worth noting that the October expansion was eventually suspended, right? Until November 2026, following a summit between Trump and Xi.
Yes. That part was walked back a bit.
But that original April restriction on the core seven elements, that stayed firmly in place. And this, I think, is where the strategy gets genuinely insidious.
Oh, definitely.
It's this classic gray zone tactic. I mean, if Beijing just outright bans the exports, that is a clear violation of World Trade Organization rules.
You face immediate international lawsuits.
Retaliatory sanctions, the whole nine yards, so you don't ban anything.
No, you just institute a dual-use item permit review. You frame the entire process as this necessary administrative step for national security. You basically argue that these materials have both civilian and military applications, and therefore, they require careful oversight.
Sure, it sounds reasonable on paper.
Right. But the devastating catch for global buyers is that there is absolutely no legally mandated deadline for this review.
So the paperwork just goes into a bureaucratic black hole.
Exactly.
It's like someone didn't formally lock you out of your apartment building. They just replaced the front door with a massive bank vault, and then they put a 45-day, totally unpredictable processing period on issuing the new key codes.
That is a brilliant way to put it.
Like, you technically still have the right to live there, but you're sleeping on the street while they process the paperwork.
Yeah, and in reality, those processing times stretch from 45 days into months. And China could only successfully deploy this bank vault strategy because they had spent literally decades achieving absolute dominance over the supply chain.
Right, they had the leverage.
Total leverage. If we look at the data from the International Energy Agency and CSIS, in 2024, China mined about 60% of the rare earths used for these types of magnets.
60% is huge, but it's not everything.
Right, but mining is just pulling dirt out of the ground. The real choke point is refining. And by 2023, China controlled 99% of the refining process for these heavy rare earth elements.
Wait, 99%? I mean, that's not a market share. That is a total monopoly.
It is. Okay. There was really only one notable refinery operating outside of China at the time, and it was located in Vietnam.
Oh, right.
But a massive tax dispute actually forced that Vietnamese facility to close for over a year. And that closure effectively handed Beijing a completed 100% global monopoly on the critical refining stage. They literally owned the entire life cycle, from the raw ore to the finished magnet.
Okay, so they've trapped the global market in this bureaucratic permit nightmare. But I think the big question for you, the listener, is probably why go through all this trouble for these seven specific elements?
It's a fair question.
I mean, dysprosium sounds like a made-up sci-fi metal. What makes these obscure elements so utterly irreplaceable to the modern economy?
It really all comes down to the physics of heat. Let's look at the robotics industry, specifically humanoids.
Okay.
To build a machine that can mimic human movement. You know, walking, lifting, having articulated fingers. You need servo motors.
Lots of them.
Right. A single capable humanoid requires roughly 40 of these servos. And to keep the robot's joints relatively small and light while still generating immense torque, manufacturers absolutely have to use neodymium magnets.
Because they're stronger.
Yeah, they provide an incredibly high magnetic field for their size. They far outperform your standard ferrite magnets.
But pure neodymium has a fatal flaw, right? If you're trying to build an industrial robot.
It does. Pure neodymium loses its magnetism when it gets hot. And the threshold is shockingly low. It's right around 80 degrees Celsius.
Wait, 80 degrees Celsius is practically nothing for a piece of industrial machinery doing continuous physical labor? Like, my laptop can get that hot if the fan breaks. If a humanoid robot is carrying heavy boxes on a factory floor for 8 hours, its internal motors are going to blow past 80 degrees very quickly.
And the moment that happens, the internal temperature rises, the magnet literally loses its magnetic force, and the robot simply drops what it's holding and stops dead in its tracks.
Which makes it useless. Mm-hmm. You can't run an automated factory with robots that need to take a break every 20 minutes to cool down.
Right. And the solution to this heat problem relies entirely on our restricted elements. You have to take a tiny amount of dysprosium and terbium, which are two of the heavy rare earths, caught in that April restriction, and physically inject them into the crystal lattice of the neodymium magnet.
And what does that do?
Doing this massively increases what physicists call its coercivity.
Coercivity. So basically, its physical ability to resist losing its magnetism under extreme heat.
Yes. It hardens the magnet against high temperatures. And now you have to consider the scale of what's happening right now in the industry. Companies like Tesla with their Optimus program, or major Chinese firms like Unitree and Agibot.
They aren't trying to build a few hundred novelty robots.
Exactly. They are gearing up to mass produce hundreds of thousands, eventually millions, of humanoid robots. Every single one of those machines will be packed with these specific heat-resistant magnets. So the demand curve is just going vertical.
And the demand isn't just coming from commercial tech companies either, which is the terrifying overlap here. The exact same high-grade, high-temperature magnets that allow a factory robot to lift a heavy box are the exact same magnets required for the most advanced military platforms on Earth.
Yes, the defense applications are massive.
We are talking about the targeting systems in the F-35 stealth fighter. We're talking about the propulsion tech in Virginia and Columbia-class nuclear submarines, the guidance systems and Tomahawk missiles. They all rely on the same heavily restricted rare earth technology to function under extreme conditions.
It is the purest definition of a dual-use technology. The foundations of modern advanced warfare and modern advanced robotics are built on the exact same chemical lattice.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Because in 2025, the U.S. Department of Defense clearly saw this crisis coming.
They did.
In July of that year, the DoD injected massive emergency funds into a U.S. company called MP Materials, specifically to secure domestic separation and refining facilities. So if the U.S. government recognizes the threat and they are literally throwing emergency defense money at it, why is it still a bottleneck?
It's a great point.
I mean, can't the U.S. just buy the blueprints, build a massive state-of-the-art refinery in Nevada, and solve the problem overnight?
It is the logical assumption, right? If you have enough capital, you can engineer your way out of anything.
Right.
But that vastly underestimates the sheer complexity of the chemistry involved here. These aren't standard industrial metals. Separating rare earths from one another is notoriously difficult because they all have nearly identical chemical properties.
Oh, what?
You know, China hasn't just been building physical factories. They have spent decades perfecting the highly sensitive, incredibly intricate chemical solvent extraction processes required to actually isolate these elements at commercial scale.
So it's not just a recipe you can follow.
No, you can buy the blueprints, sure. But the source material notes that it's about the touch of a hand that has refined these elements tens of thousands of times. That kind of profound institutional intuition just cannot be bought with an emergency grant.
That is a harsh reality check. It's not just about pouring concrete for a factory. It's about institutional knowledge that takes an entire generation of specialized chemical engineers to build.
Exactly. You cannot simply fast track decades of trial and error.
So if nobody in the West can quickly replicate China's refinement process, what actually happened when the music stopped? Let's look at the immediate market fallout for the countries that were wholly reliant on these materials right after that April 2025 restriction took effect.
Well, the data from ORF America paints a pretty brutal picture of those first few months. In April and May of 2025, immediately after the control measures went live, China's export of rare earth magnets vanished by 75%.
75% gone. The global supply just evaporated.
Yes. And the downstream effects were instant and severe. U.S. and European automakers suddenly couldn't source the magnets they needed for EV motors.
Just totally stuck.
They had to dramatically lower their factory utilization rates and, in several cases, completely halt their production lines. Assembly lines in Japan, which rely heavily on steady streams of these parts, had to drastically slow down.
And obviously, when a critical supply vanishes by 75% overnight, the prices go parabolic.
Oh, absolutely.
Dysprosium, that vital element for the heat resistance we talked about, tripled in a single month. It rocketed over $750 per kilogram. Terbium doubled to $2,850 per kilogram.
Insane numbers.
And because regional bottlenecks formed instantly, European manufacturers were reportedly paying six times the local price available inside China.
And that creates a massive, insurmountable structural disadvantage for anyone trying to manufacture hardware outside of China.
Definitely.
But what is truly revealing is how different high-tech economies actually attempted to absorb this shock. The contrast between Japan and South Korea here is highly illuminating.
Let's start with Japan because they occupy a really unique, almost paradoxical position in this market.
They really do. Japan is home to top-tier, world-class magnet processors like Shin'etsu and TDK. They're the undisputed biggest magnet producers outside of China.
Right.
But they faced a fundamental paradox.
Yeah.
They had the high-tech factories and the expertise to make the finished magnets, but they relied almost entirely on China for the raw, heavy, rare earth elements to actually feed those factories.
So when the upstream raw materials were choked off, their downstream factories faced immediate shutdowns.
Exactly.
But Japan saw the writing on the wall, didn't they? They managed to mitigate a later shock.
Yes, their intelligence and corporate forecasting really saved them from the worst of it later on. When diplomatic tensions flared and China signaled an additional restriction aimed specifically at Japan in January 2026, Japanese buyers anticipated the move.
From art.
Very. They aggressively hoarded inventory.
Well,
in December 2025 alone, Japan imported 280 tons of Chinese magnets, which is massively higher than their usual volume.
They just stockpiled everything they could get their hands on.
Pretty much. And at the same time, the Japanese government and private sector had been aggressively working to diversify their raw material sourcing. They were quietly establishing new supply lines in Central Asia.
So Japan blunts the blow through aggressive stockpiling and finding alternative dirt in Central Asia. But South Korea's situation is entirely different and, frankly, much more dire.
It is. A January 2026 report by the Korea International Trade Association, or KITA, really laid bare the vulnerability of the South Korean economy, because South Korea actually boasts the highest robot density in the entire world.
It's crazy. 1,012 industrial robots for every 10,000 human workers. That is a staggering level of national automation.
It's the highest automation integration on the planet. Yet, despite building their entire industrial strategy around robotics, South Korea relies on China for 88.8% of their permanent magnets.
Wow.
On top of that, their domestic localization rate for key materials and parts is stuck around 40%. So the tragic irony here is that the more robots South Korea deploys to modernize their economy, the more reliant they become on importing foreign parts to build and maintain them.
The phrase used by the source material to describe South Korea is perfect. They call it a spectacular title, but a poor foundation.
So true.
When you look at the cost structure of a robot, the actuator, which includes the motor, the reducer, and the controller, makes up over 40% of the entire manufacturing cost.
Right.
If the thermal component of that actuator, the heat-resistant magnet, triples in price overnight because of a bureaucratic restriction, your entire national manufacturing advantage just evaporates. You simply can't compete.
So the burning question for South Korea, and really the rest of the tech world, is how do you escape this trap? What are the technological and strategic escape routes?
Well, there's one major technological workaround that the source discusses, and it's gaining a lot of traction. It's a process called grain boundary diffusion, or GBD.
GBD is a fascinating piece of metallurgical engineering. Traditionally, to make a magnet heat resistant, you would mix the expensive heavy rare earths, like dysprosium or terbium, evenly throughout the entire mixture of the magnet.
Right.
It works, but it requires a lot of the material. With grain boundary diffusion, you precisely inject those expensive elements only along the microscopic boundaries of the neodymium crystals.
Oh, wait, so it's like frosting the outside of the microscopic crystals instead of mixing the expensive ingredients directly into the batter.
That's a great visualization. Exactly. It drastically reduces the overall volume of heavy rare earths you need per magnet, which obviously saves a fortune and heavily reduces your reliance on those restricted Chinese materials, all while maintaining that crucial high temperature resistance.
And this is a massive, but for South Korea, this leads to what's known as the double dependency trap.
Precisely. Because while GBD is the obvious technological savior, the vital patents and the deep manufacturing know-how for this specific process are largely held by Japanese companies.
The ones we mentioned earlier.
Yes. Specifically those top-tier firms like Shin-Etsu and TDK.
So South Korea is trapped on two fronts. They are reliant on China for the raw materials and the standard finished magnets. And now they are reliant on their historical rival, Japan, for the advanced technological workaround to use less of the Chinese materials.
It is a profound structural vulnerability. The KITA report recognized this and laid out several long-term solutions to try and dig out of this hole.
Like what?
Well, they advised heavy government risk sharing to incentivize domestic production. They also suggested adopting package export models, meaning companies shouldn't just sell a robot hardware unit. They need to bundle it with proprietary system integration and long-term after-service contracts to artificially increase the profit margin and absorb the hardware costs.
That makes sense.
And critically, they emphasized urban mining.
Urban mining, meaning physically recovering rare earths from dead, discarded motors, right?
Yes.
Ripping the magnets out of old hard drives and scrapped EV motors, chemically breaking them down and reusing the elements. Japan actually relied heavily on this strategy to absorb the initial shock.
Exactly. Extracting the resources you've already imported rather than trying to dig new ones out of the ground or buy them from a monopoly.
So what does this all mean? When we pull all these threads together, the bureaucratic bank vaults, the physics of coercivity, the market crashes, and these desperate technological workarounds, we have to look at the timeline.
Yeah, and the timeline is tough.
S&P Global Commodity Insights released a forecast on this, and it is grim. They predicted this bottleneck of heavy rare earths is going to persist straight through 2026 and well into 2027.
It's a long time in the tech world.
It is. The hard reality of the mining industry is that it takes 5 to 7 years and billions in capital investment to build a reliable vertical supply chain from a newly discovered mine all the way to a finished high-grade magnet.
And this brings us to the ultimate overarching irony of this entire geopolitical saga. By weaponizing their monopoly over these core minerals, Beijing achieved a massive, undeniable, short-term tactical victory.
Without a doubt.
They caused immense economic pain and disrupted global supply lines. But weaponization ultimately forces self-reliance. By pulling the trigger on those export controls in April 2025, Beijing actually accelerated the exact thing they wanted to prevent.
Right.
They forced Western democracies, allied nations, and massive tech conglomerates to prioritize and fast-track their supply chain diversification. They made the cost of finding alternatives suddenly worth the investment.
They basically woke a sleeping giant. It just takes 5 to 7 years for that giant to actually get out of bed and build a refinery. And that wraps up our deep dive into the hidden world of heavy rare earth elements. We've seen how the global race for the next generation of robotics, artificial intelligence, and advanced defense systems isn't just about writing better code.
Not at all.
It is entirely physically tethered to a handful of microscopic elements on the periodic table. A simple bureaucratic squeeze, a requirement for an unpredictable permit, has fundamentally reshaped the global supply chain as we head deeper into 2026.
The physical reality of hardware is violently reasserting itself over the digital world.
It really is. Before we go, I want to leave you, the listener, with a final lingering question inspired by everything we just unpacked. We established that the exact same rare earth magnets are required to build a factory floor humanoid robot and an F-35 stealth fighter.
Right, the dual use problem.
Exactly. That dual-use nature is what makes them so heavily guarded. So as humanoid robots become common in our daily lives, you know, when you eventually buy a commercial robot to help around your house or stock the shelves at your small business, will those personal machines eventually be classified as dual-use military assets?
It's a crazy thought.
Because the materials inside their joints are vital to national security. Will you one day need government security clearance just to buy a replacement shoulder motor for your household robot? Think about that the next time you see a slick tech demo of a new humanoid doing a backflip. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. See you next time.